Yes, that's right. You're listening to RTU 98.5. Now, I am so excited to have a very, very interesting guest on the line because, as you know, I'm a bit of a history nerd sometimes. Today happens to be the 60th anniversary of when the Beatles played, I believe, here in Christchurch. So it's very fitting that I have a man named Andy Neil on the line with me right now. Andy is one of the co-authors of the book When We Was Fab, Inside the Beatles Australasian Tour 1964. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
I'm very well, Liam. Great to be on the show.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on. Now, have you always had a lifetime love affair with the Beatles?
I think it's fair to say that, yes. going right back to the 1970s, I wasn't a first-generation fan, but I'm the youngest of four siblings, and my eldest brother, Chris, was a huge Beatles fan, and by the time he came to leave home, he left all of his stuff behind, including a lot of records, and a lot of those records were Beatles records, and so I sort of absorbed it all through him, really, and throughout the 70s, I just got more and more interested in them. And sometime in the mid-70s, I saw a clip on New Zealand television of the Beatles arriving in New Zealand, and I thought, my God, they actually came here. I had no idea. And that sort of planted the seed for the book, which is now out.
Yeah, now, tell me, what is it like compiling a book like this? Because there's a lot of sourcing that must have to go into a book like this. I mean, you must be fishing for photos and information about it.
Well, yes, it's quite a process. I guess the first stage was finding out about the tour, so that involved looking through the newspapers of the time.
Mm.
So I would go to all the cities that the Beatles played, Wellington, Auckland, Dunedin, Christchurch, and I would get the local paper out of the Times. So in the case of Christchurch, I believe it was the Press, was it? And the Christchurch Star. So I would look through every issue for 1964, not just for when the Beatles were in town, but for the whole year to get an idea of what Christchurch was like at the time, how they reacted to the Beatles, and the lead-up, the build-up to when they actually arrived and the aftermath. So that was the first stage. And then I would put feelers out for people who were there, who had memories of going to the shows or seeing them arrive at the airport or at the hotel. And then it would just carry on from there. They would say, well, we've got photographs. So we would access their photographs. And then I would go to what was the newspaper archives at the time and see if they had any photographs. But it wasn't just in one place, as you can imagine. It was just worldwide. So it was just a case of foraging, and that's pretty much why it took so long for it to come together.
Yeah, so when did you start this process?
Well, I guess it goes right back to like the 70s and 80s, when I didn't have an idea for a book then, obviously, but it was just a case of gathering information together. And as I got more information, the story started to take shape. So I guess the idea for a book sort of coalesced probably in the 1990s when it was the 30th anniversary.
Gosh.
But then again, there was only just a vague plan to do the New Zealand side of it. But as I went on, I realized that, no, the whole story of the whole tour needs to be told. And New Zealand's obviously an important part of that. But I needed to tell the whole thing, because to put it into its proper context. And so fast forward to 2005, 2006, a mutual friend of mine who lived in Melbourne said, well, it's funny you're doing what you're doing. I know a guy who's doing that on the Australian side of the tour.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's how I hooked up with my co-author, Greg Armstrong. And, you know, it just made sense to join forces.
Resources. Oh, that's such a cool story. Oh, I didn't know that. That's brilliant. Now, you've obviously talked to people who were at these concerts.
Yeah.
Well, what are the reviews? How was the shows? How were they?
Well, I think if you talk to most of the kids now, sort of like senior citizens who went to the shows, they loved it, of course.
Mm.
You know, it was the highlight of the year. It was the you know, it was the red letter day on their calendar.
Oh, I'm sure.
What's more amusing are the sort of the what were considered more mature reviewers for the daily papers who were sent by their paper, given a ticket to go along and review it, and some of their sort of perceptions or reviews of it are quite amusing because, you know, they're just more concerned with the reaction to the Beatles rather than the Beatles as a group or a group of performers or whatever. There was one review in the Auckland Star, which was quite dry, actually. He said, like, you know, the lung power was formidable and the noise level was most impressive and our teenagers put on quite a show. As for the Beatles, well, I didn't hear them. I can't listen to everything. It's a really, really sort of dismissive thing. So it was quite a sort of a, you know, the kids loved them, and I think the older generation were a bit sort of looked askance at it and were a bit bemused by it, and they were more concerned with the phenomenon of the screaming and the noise and young girls sort of like, you know, reacting in the way they did to the Beatles and to the Beatles as a bunch of musicians.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if you kind of dive into this, but pre this tour, realistically, how many really big global music acts had actually come to New Zealand? Like, they would be one of the first, would they not?
The Beatles were one of the first notable things. But there had been tours through before. You know, when rock and roll started in the mid-50s, there was a guy in Australia called Lee Gordon. He was an American guy, and there's a little bit about him in the book. Mm. He was quite revolutionary in the sense that up until then, Australia and New Zealand had, it was mainly entertainment for the adults. So you get a lot of sort of like what you would term perhaps more cultural acts coming through, you know, like, you know, concert pianists and ballet dancers and stage shows. But he's, when rock and roll exploded with Elvis in the 50s, he brought out a lot of the really key acts like, you know, Gene Vincent, Little Richard, Buddy Holly even, just before he died, Chuck Berry. But unfortunately, they only came to Australia. But by that point, the promoter of the Australian tour, a guy called Ken Brodziak in Melbourne, and Kerridge Odeon here in New Zealand, they partnered up, they became business partners, so they started to bring acts through. But in terms of the pop acts, in terms of, you know, popular music, it had been sort of more that pre-Beatles, more sort of mainstream sort of raft of acts like Cliff Richard and the Shadows, for example, Adam Faith, Helen Shapiro. We did get people like the Everly Brothers through and things like, and Roy Orbison. But the Beatles in 1964 was the first really big one, the one that certainly made headlines, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like New Zealand really wouldn't have, you know, huge amounts of experience with things like this. Now, have you managed to get any information kind of from the Beatles' perspective of this tour?
Well, they've spoken about it that in the 1990s they did their own project, the Beatles Anthology.
Mm.
And the New Zealand tour was, I guess, in their experience, just like a small part of just a huge, the experience they went through together. John Lennon called it the Eye of the Hurricane, because the center of the hurricane is calm, but while everything else is chaos. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So they started to look back on it after the Beatles broke up, you know, in 1970, and they started to look back on their career. So I had comments from each of them about it. There are quotes from each of the former Beatles about it. But you can imagine, I mean, if you ask them the more arcane details about what do you remember about going to Christchurch and having eggs thrown at you, they could probably remember it, but not in great detail. So it wasn't imperative to me to actually get anything from them. I mean, if they offered, of course, I'd take it up. But more the people around the Beatles and the people who were working for Kerrigodian on the tour, their perspective was far more important, because obviously it meant more to them than it did to the Beatles. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. It was just the fact that the main principals were so busy living it that they can't remember specifics.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, they were much more, had a much more clear-eyed view of what was going on, you know, so I was more keen to get to them.
Yeah, fair enough as well. I think that's a very good point. Now, is this book out now?
Yes, it is. It's available in all good bookstores and all the bad ones too. And you can actually get it from the main distributor of the book in New Zealand is Headley's Books, who are based in Masterton. If you go on their website, it's available to order. Or if you want to go to the publisher, it's an Australian publisher, Woods Lane Press, www.woodslanepress.com.au. But it should be in all major bookshops around New Zealand. In fact, I saw it this morning as I was walking around. So, yeah, it's out there, so please go and get it.
And is it intentionally the same size as, like, a record?
There is that coincidental thing. I mean, a book like this, it was important because we had so much stuff, as we've touched upon. I mean, there's like literally like thousands of illustrations, and it was quite a involved operation to sort of whittle it down to what you see in the final book. But with a 12-inch by 12-inch book, when you lay out the pages, it actually gives you more scope and more of a canvas to actually put more material in there.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
If you make it smaller, your options are cut. You know, you have to, you know, you haven't got as much of a freer rein, whereas if you've got a much bigger page, and to fit the text in. And it's a much cleaner and more sort of, you know, we haven't crammed it. You know, one of the things I hate about the book is that where your eye just gets assaulted by so much stuff on a page. We've let it breathe, and it's quite economical, but you get a lot of space as well. So that's why the 12 by 12 format seemed to naturally lend itself to this book.
Yeah, it's it looks just gorgeous. I can't wait to get my hands on a copy of it. And yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be complaining at the size. It'll just, I can tell, it's going to be fantastic to read.
One slight reservation we had is that obviously the people who saw the Beatles now be like at least in their like late 60s, 70s. We thought the weight of it might be a problem. I think you have to do some weight lifts first before you try and pick it up.
No, good. I need to work out anyway. Andy, thank you so much for joining me this morning. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And it's just so cool what you've done here. So thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Liam. Thank you for having me. Great talking to you.
And that was Andy Neil, a co-author of When We Was Fab, Inside the Beatles Australasian Tour 1964, a fantastic new book out now. If you're a bit of a history nerd like myself, you should absolutely go and get that.